We're Nicole, Camille, and Brianne, your instructors and hosts for the Support Night School podcast. We created this podcast to help people get into online customer support. In the last episode, we took a brief tour of common terms and acronyms that you'll likely hear, and we provided some additional resources for studying. Your homework was to review one of the glossaries provided and reach out to us with any questions. Leave us a note at supportnightschool.com and let us know how it's going. In today's episode, we're talking about growing your career no matter the stage of your journey. We'll explore opportunities within support, as well as stories about pivoting to new careers entirely. Let's start with suggestions for advancing your career in a current support role. Brianne, what are a few of the top tips that you've shared with direct reports and mentees over the years?
I think some of the best tips that I've shared have to do with impact. I would say, you know, work on the most impactful problems and then you become a most impactful team member. So one of the things that I like to tell people is pay attention to the problems that everyone agrees is a priority, but no one has the time to fix, right? Maybe it's just that thorn in the side that no one really has the time to dive into. But if you can find a way to prioritize it, find a solution for it, you become infinitely more valuable because you're seen as that person who, oh, you GSD, you get shit done. And you don't have to do it alone. You can do it with other folks. You can rally other team members behind you, but you just have to lead. Sometimes companies will give you like a 10%er, basically is what it's called, where they'll say, you know, 10% of your time you can use to work on projects that, you know, are not a huge priority for the org, but are the thorn in your side, you know, type of priority projects. And so I would say work on the most impactful ones during that time. One of the other things I would say is that every conversation is feedback. I once had to let someone go because, well, for a number of reasons, but one of the last conversations we had was, but you don't ever give me any feedback. And it was a really interesting conversation for me to have because every conversation we had was filled with feedback. The other person just was not listening and they didn't understand that it was filled with feedback. So it's important for you to learn how others want to receive that information. And it also helps other people learn the same thing about you. How do you like to receive information? How do you like to be given feedback? I've had colleagues and friends for years, and you still learn how to be with them in a conversation. You learn what they need. They learn what you need. And it helps kind of grease the wheels to get stuff done. You understand that so-and-so over in engineering likes to be talked to a certain way, and you do that, and all of a sudden that person in engineering is like, what can I do for you, right? So it greases the wheels in a way that everyone's happy with. You shouldn't feel the need to treat every piece of feedback the same. They're perspectives, right? If you don't respect that person's opinion, they give you a piece of feedback, you're like, oh, that's great. Thanks for the feedback. Camille, I know that you've had some pretty good thoughts about feedback, and I love and value your opinions. Do you want to chime in here on this one?
There were a lot of things you said that definitely resonated with me. I know at one company, we had a reading group for a very popular book called Radical Candor. It's quite popular in Silicon Valley amongst software companies. This idea that you need to just give like direct feedback, no sugarcoating to people. And a lot of people really take that on as their feedback style. There's also fetishization of feedback and like this idea that it's some sort of stone that you rub up against that will make you sort of like a perfect, shiny, smooth thing that I don't know can work at Facebook or one of these companies that the woman who wrote the book worked at in the past. You really do have to take it with a grain of salt. The same time we were reading Radical Candor, I also found this article from the Harvard Business Review called The Feedback Fallacy, which digs into that. At the end of the day, feedback is just one person's opinion of you or one person's assessment of the work that you've done. There's no science to it. It's really just a feeling, maybe held up against a particular standard. Take it with whatever truths you can pull out of it. Another resource that I'd recommend related to feedback is a book by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen called Thanks for the Feedback. And it's about how do you take in feedback, understanding your feedback style. Are you a person that like if somebody gives you one compliment or one positive piece of feedback, you're riding high for the rest of the day? Or Are you one of those people that like you get one negative piece and you're like in the dumps for a week? I know I'm of the latter. Like it's really hard for me to pull myself back up. If somebody's just like, you forgot to dot your I here, I'm like, oh God, I just never do anything right. So the book is very helpful in terms of understanding and providing the science behind how our minds work and how we take in information. It's helpful if you find yourself somebody who's very defensive when you get feedback. And it's also helpful if you're somebody who's on the other side where you're just like, everything I do is great, or I'm taking it all in too seriously. It just helps you think about having a ballast there around feedback. But getting feedback is a valuable part of moving your career forward. And if you can communicate with the people that manage you, the people that assess your work about how best to give feedback. I know when I onboard new people, I always ask them, what's your best way of getting feedback? And also I like to dig into what their sort of history of getting feedback is. I know I've worked for people who said I got picked on a lot as a kid, or I went to Catholic school and the nuns were really mean to me. And so understanding also their kind of foundation of what feedback means to them helps you kind of cater it. It's hard, you know, if you're managing a lot of people, it's hard, but I try and be mindful and say, okay, I know this person is like, if I stand them in front of the whole company and be like, clap, clap for Suzanne, she did a great job, they're gonna be freaking mortified, then I won't do that, you know? If they just were like, I would love you to just send me like a sweet six pack of donuts as opposed to that quietly, then I wanna do that instead as a manager. But making sure, getting your needs met, as we've talked about in past episodes, is really about you speaking up and saying what you need. So if you need to hear back from your boss about what you're doing well, what you're doing poorly, let them know. And let them know, like, I'd love it if next time I make a mistake, you get me on the spot and you tell me right then and I can course correct then. Or I'd prefer it if you wait till our one-on-ones and we talk about it when you've had more time to process and I've had more time to process. Speak up for yourself and improve yourself in your career.
Those are some great suggestions, Camille. If somebody that you do respect gives you positive feedback and you value their opinion, you know, you want to put that feedback in your toolkit and save it for a rainy day, whether you need to, you know, pick yourself up again, like you said, or you want to use that to advance your career, what are some of your suggestions? What do you do with that positive feedback when you get it?
I like to collect it in a little, you know, little digital notepad, do a little screenshot. My last company, I know we used a tool where you could give people sort of positive kudos. And I like to share, I like to capture those and put them somewhere to remind me of the good work I've done. I also like to proactively ask people for LinkedIn reviews, LinkedIn, I think that's what they're called, recommendations, I think they're called. Sometimes people get worried. They're like, you're quitting your job. But I like to do it when it's like fresh in my mind. I also like to give people when it's fresh in my mind. Sometimes it is because I'm like, I'm about to peace out of this job. And like, I want to, you know, kind of doff my cap to you on my way out. But I also try and ask people to, I think employers do look at those things and they say, whoa, I've had people reach out to me based on like, wow, so many people that you've worked with in the past have such great things to say about you. So letting people do it in the moment is really good. You know, being able to find people who have something nice to say about you and show it out to the public is so valuable. I also think in addition to that, separate from feedback, it's great to just track what you've done and the impact you've had in an organization. Every time I start a new job, I create a Google in my Gmail, my email, I just create a draft and I just start putting stuff there. I'm like, did this, knock this out. Remember they like this, because there's something called recency bias. When people go to give you a 6-month review, an annual review, they remember what you did last week, but the huge impact you had 6 weeks ago, they sometimes have forgotten about. So you need to capture that yourself and be able to bring that forward. So when you're talking about the impact that you've had, then you are getting past just the cool thing you did last week, moving forward and showing like, oh, wait, oh, damn, you did a lot this year. You know, Brianne, you look like you got something to say.
Yeah, I think it's also a wonderful way to get over any kind of imposter syndrome that you may have, and not even get over, because that's a lifelong affliction, and I'll tell you, that's for sure. I often forget all of the accomplishments that I've had throughout my life, and it's easy to focus on the next big problem, right? It's easy to focus on the thing that you haven't accomplished yet, or the things that you maybe did a little bit wrong or that you want to do better. But you need to also focus on the things that you've done really well and that were really impactful and everyone gave you kudos for. And sometimes if you don't do something like a brag doc, you miss out on that long-term memory of all the awesome things you did.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that when you are pulling together your resume or refreshing your resume, it's really good to have those things like, I moved this from this percentage to that percentage, or I added this many positive widgets or negative, you removed this many negative widgets, and you forget later on. So if you're just tracking it as you go along, when it comes time to show the impact you had over the years you spent at whatever organization, you'll have it at the ready, because otherwise you're just like, what did I do? I remember it being a lot. In terms of figuring out where you want to make an impact, how can you make an impact that you can start tracking in your brag book?
Yeah, I think what I usually like to do is I like to get to know folks on other teams and understand ways that they're also struggling. If you're shadowing other teams across the organization, you naturally start making these connections with issues that you're having on your own team and issues that they're having. And there might be an opportunity for you to knock something out that can affect multiple teams in the organization. So it allows you to find small ways to contribute that are still impactful while still keeping on your primary job, right? Like over time, what that has done for me is it's kind of pushed me into this cross-functional and change management person who's able to kind of choose the things that I want to work on, because I've wound up being a generalist, right? I've moved into operations. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, but that's exactly what I did. I started making allies across the organization, finding ways that I could make impacts on multiple teams across the org. And as I did that, I built up my own little subject matter expertise around operations and cross-functional management. Speaking of becoming a subject matter expert, Nicole, I know that you have a lot to say on this area, especially in the realm of technology.
Yeah. So I think in previous episodes, we mentioned briefly this concept of a subject matter expert or SME. And it's another great way to sort of distinguish yourself in any role, really, but especially when you're in an individual contributor role on a team and you want to just advance your skill set or also just explore those other interests that you have. There are many different subjects that you could become an expert on and build that expertise. It could be experience using a technology that your company is using that you have experience in and others don't, or maybe it's just really hard to use and nobody else has had the time to become really proficient in it, and you can take that on and share that wisdom that you've gained with the rest of your team. Maybe you are really great at presentations and you want to start helping your manager or director at quarterly meetings with presenting some data. Maybe you love pulling reports and you can help with that. I think along similar lines, another way to sort of differentiate yourself and just continue to grow at any level, but especially this in more junior positions, mid-level, is to stay informed of industry trends. You know, it's really valuable if you are aware of sort of what's coming up in support news, right? What direction are people headed? AI and machine learning tools that companies are using. When your organization maybe gets to a decision point where you need to choose a new product, a new tool, that feedback and research that you've sort of done and been keeping up with can prove really helpful. And similarly, there's also, you know, whatever industry your organization is in and how those intersect. And that will create a lot of variables, right? And so you can also become an expert there. And really, when you stay on top of these trends, what you're doing is thinking really high level, right? And kind of seeing what is ahead and preparing for the future. In that way, you're teaching yourself how to think strategically. Why don't we pivot a little bit to some specific tracks that you can explore as you're thinking about growing your career in customer support in particular? Camille, tell me a little bit about how you think about team structure and growth and your experience there.
I take my thinking around growth from a lot of hard learned lessons from other engineering managers that I know or follow. And also my experience working alongside engineers, I have found that there are two types typically of engineers. There is one that wants to grow horizontally in terms of their breadth of knowledge around the area that they're working in. You know, I want to learn a new language. I want to learn a new framework. I want to learn how to, you know, refactor this body of code in this repo. And then there's others that want to move forward and like, I would like to lead this project. I'd like to start helping people understand where they need to be resourced for the next sprint. I want to manage people and mentor them. I want to grow up and be a VP of engineering or be a CTO that can set technical direction for an organization. I rarely find people that are both. I often find people that end up in the wrong place. There's a concept called the Peter Principle, and this idea that people rise to their own level of incompetence. And you find a lot of times in the technical space, people will be the most popular engineer or the most well-respected engineer. So what do? Give them a totally separate job, give him or her something else to do that they're not really great at. So having observed that so many times on the engineering side of the house, when it came my turn to create growth paths for my team, I thought about it based on how I could either support people in growing in breadth or in growing upwards into leadership. So I think about it either horizontally or vertically. So the way that I pulled this together for my team is I looked at people and I said, okay, I have a bunch of individuals who are support engineers now. Alongside their interest in supporting this product, they're also interested in maybe product team, working with the product team better, working with marketing to tell our customer stories, maybe working with the sales team so they better understand how the product works and how we can better support our customers and how they can bring in the right customers in the first place who are going to be easier to support moving forward. So I thought about it in terms of these different tracks. Do you want to work on alignment with this team or that team? Or also, do you want to work on just improving our team? And I look at that in terms of, do you want to just get really strong across, let's say if you're improving our team, you're going to get really strong across a suite of tools. If you're on product, do you want to get really strong across how our product works and how to build the bridges, build the integrations between the team? Or do you want to eventually move forward and lead the team of people that builds that bridge between the two? Or finally, do you want to continue to move forward and eventually transition over to that team? So those are the ways I think about people growing in my team. And for every sort of station that people are in, there's expectations associated with that. If you say you're looking to be a team lead, then I want to see you demonstrating leadership on a project independently and not just you doing all the work, but you being able to delegate to people in a way that shows me, hey, you could take on this body of work. So demonstrating that ahead of time and then almost kind of like winning the prize afterwards, not like I'll put you in that role and then you have to rise to it. I want to see that potential there and you demonstrate that for me. So that's the way I tend to think about growing people on my team. And when people interview with me, I hear more and more, what's my opportunity to grow here? And I have a very clear sense of what I'm looking for. If they say, I want to be a leader, I want to already start hearing about how you've shown leadership, even if it's just in a volunteer group or something like that. How have you already started to demonstrate that so that I can continue to nurture that as we move forward? And as I mentioned with the feedback, the same way it's important to communicate to your manager how you like to receive feedback, it's also important to communicate your future career goals to your manager so they can support you in those. I know I work with some people in support right now who have some keen interest in maybe being a solutions architect or being a DevOps engineer. So if I hear in higher level conversations something interesting happening with solutions architects, I'm like, hey, let me squeeze Julie into that. I know Julie said she wanted to learn a little bit more about DevOps and how that works. Here's a nice low stakes way. So help people help you by communicating where you want to go career-wise or even where you're just curious. You know, I had a person who joined my organization from a tech boot camp, and these tech boot camps just tell you you're just going to be a developer. And she joined and she was like, wait, there's a whole bunch of other things I can do with my technical skill set. And so I put her on sort of an exploratory wheel around the company where people were technical but weren't working as developers. So if you empower your manager, they can empower you to explore your options. The other thing, you know, that connects very closely with the idea of the team ladders and the tracks that I pull together for employee growth is this idea of being glue. And there's a really great talk. It's really worth your time to watch. I think it's about 20 minutes. And it's this idea of you can work with your team and do this work that connects your team to other teams that improves processes. But if you're not communicating with your manager and making sure that you have clear expectations, you might be doing a lot of great work that you're putting into your brag book that nobody asked you to do, and that's not going to move your career forward. So making sure that you can get aligned with your manager about pursuing the work that's going to move your career forward, that also is work that the organization needs, rather than just spinning your wheels and being like, I'm doing great work and people are giving me a lot of pats on the back. And then your 1 year review comes and people are like, well, what did you actually do? And you're exhausted and on the floor and just hoping that you get your reward for all this. And it doesn't align with the goals that the organization set for you. So as you're thinking about pursuing areas where you can move your career forward, making sure you have those check-ins with your managers, making sure expectations are clearly set, that you've communicated about where you want to go and the plan for how to get you there.
Yeah, Camille, you mentioned ladders. I wanted to kind of build on that. The basic ladder is you start as an individual contributor, you wind up managing team projects, you can wind up managing people, and then go into managing departments. But one of the things to be aware of is all of those roles require leadership in one way or another, right? Every single one of those requires leadership, and it's not just a management quality. You know, if you're working as an individual contributor, you still need to understand other people on your team and know how to lead them out of situations, out of conversations, and into more productive areas of your work together. I think we've mentioned in past episodes about mentorship programs and other extracurricular resources. I think we really need to lean on people that are outside of our organization that have been where we are, because sometimes it's easy to get into the place where you're only seeing the same perspectives of the people on your team, right? Or the people in your organization. It's not good to have that same perspective all the time. Yes, there's a lot of different minds in there in one organization, but from a growth perspective, you want to be able to inject new things that you've learned into every single thing that you do at the company. And so working with people who are outside the company, whether in a mentorship program, whether in, you know, a meetup or whatever, you really get to learn from people who've been where you are and can help you see the different paths all the way up to wherever you want to be. And I've always said that I have a director role right now, and I've always said, I don't think I want to go any higher than director. I kind of like where I am because I get to be this wonderful hybrid of, yes, reports and strategy and whatever, but I also get to, you know, have my hands in the weeds a lot of the time. And if I went higher up on that executive ladder, I wouldn't get to do that all that much. So knowing where you want to be and then finding people who have been where you want to be is a really good place to start.
Just to chime in really quickly, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that there's nothing wrong with flying a little close to the sun and realizing you don't like the warmth. I remember I saw a really good talk at a conference where a guy had been promoted up to manager, and then he realized he really did love working as an individual contributor. And to the point that Brianne made, I have flown close to the sun in my career, and I'm not as close to the sun this time. And I may want to go there again in the future, but right now it's been really, really nice. So one of the things that I will credit Sheryl Sandberg for, fine, you get 1 point, Sheryl Sandberg, is this idea of this monkey bars career where you can go swing up this way and then maybe step down that way and then go up this way, and don't feel trapped. Don't feel like, oh, well, I got up to this high of a level, or I got up to this point in my career, I have to stay here now or excel. You know, if you identify a place where you love doing the work, focus on that and you'll be able to figure out how to tell the story of your career later on.
Yeah. What do they call it? It's a jungle gym, not a ladder. That's a place I see a lot of people get hung up, and myself included, is this pressure we put on ourselves to continue to move up, move up, move up, get promoted. And we just assume that that path is leadership. Once you get there, you realize how many people are there and don't want to be. And then you look at this crisis we have about bad managers and people not getting their needs met. ask yourself what your motivation is. Why do you want that? Is it because you really enjoy helping other people and spending your days in meetings? Because most of your day will just be back-to-back meetings all day. I personally loved that most of the time. And a lot of people thought I was a big weirdo for that. For others, that's their worst nightmare. They just want to be left alone and do their work. There are so many opportunities. Again, thinking about what brings you energy, what you enjoy, you know, be honest with yourself and you may be surprised. So we talked about becoming a subject matter expert as a way to continue to grow your skills. And I think this also ties well into specific tracks. Maybe there are tracks that exist today on your team, like support engineering for those more technical folks. You might have folks who are specializing in escalations or incident management, some of those higher stakes issues that happen at your company, and maybe you're actually required to be on call for part of the time. So sometimes these roles can be official, or maybe you become a subject matter expert and it becomes a new track that your team explores as they grow. I know there are people who specialize, billing is so complex at their organization, they simply handle all of the billing issues that come through. Similarly, if you're in incident management, you probably will be asked to contribute to communications at some point. And perhaps that's a role that you can take on, is when you send out an email campaign to users or customers to let them know what happened, how are you phrasing that, right? It's a lot easier for the folks who are closest to the issue and understand it for them to flip that and communicate it into a customer-facing message.
One of the more overlooked paths inside of support would be the operational path, focusing on processes, tooling, documentation. I was the first hired support person at my current day job, and I used my need for organization to my advantage for sure. I have a natural bent towards operations and process. I love removing hurdles. I love scaling teams. And my goal is always to make myself redundant by writing everything down. The amazing thing, though, is that in doing that, I've never been made redundant. Like, I've always been seen as someone who's indispensable in companies that I've worked at because of doing things like that. But like Camille mentioned, being the glue has its pros and cons. And I really suggest you look at the resources that we're going to link in the show notes, because it has to be something that you enjoy doing. It has to be something that the company sees as valuable. And also from a female perspective, be cognizant of you being the sole woman in that situation who's doing that. If you're doing the emotional labor work, the glue work, and you're the only woman or only women are doing that work at your organization, be cognizant of that and make sure that you're requiring your male colleagues to do the same types of work so that you're not the only one who's putting in all that extra emotional labor.
So if none of this is really sounding quite right to you, it could be that you want to think about moving into a completely different role. Maybe you found something in particular that you do in support that you really loved and you'd want to do more of it. And beyond support and the opportunities that we've talked about within that, there are other functions that are closely related. Teams we've mentioned, different departments. So let's talk about what a pivot to a different function would look like. Brianne, I know you've worked a lot in customer success, which is closely related to customer support. Can you tell us about what are the similarities, the differences, and why would it maybe make sense for somebody to consider customer success?
Yeah, I think support and success are two different sides of the same coin. Ultimately, your role is to ensure that the customer is getting everything that they need out of your product, right? Whether it's from learning about a new feature or it's fixing a bug, helping to fix a bug and get a hurdle out of their way. I think for a lot of people, support, you can go in a lot of different ways. Like Nicole said, if you're more of a technical person, you may wind up going into higher levels of support engineering. You may wind up going into engineering, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But for success, I know for me, I had much more of a relationship building approach with my customers. So even when I was in support, I would try to anticipate their needs, try to understand what they were saying and what was the root of the problem behind what they were saying. So I was learning more about them as a business, and that helped me transition into customer success, because if I can understand what they're ultimately trying to accomplish, then I can really help them get there much more quickly. So we talked last time and said, you know, success is the proactive portion, right? You're educating customers about the product, you're learning their business, you're making sure their continued growth fits with where you're going as a product, and it's all about relationship building. So if you have those natural tendencies, transitioning into customer success can be a very natural step. I mentioned earlier about operations. I did ops for customer support when I built that team. I built up the customer success team, and now I've transitioned into business operations, and that helps me affect more change across the organization. And I've said it before, but it's really great for generalists. I work with every organization in the company to make sure that they're operating efficiently and effectively and cross-functionally. So it's naturally where I go anyway. So if you're the type who sits in the room and says, but has anyone thought about X? And they all look at you and go, oh, yeah, Brianne, go ahead, tell us what, you know, you get to be that person who sees those hurdles and moves them out of the way and makes teams much more effective in your organization. Marketing is an interesting one, especially if you're in an organization with a big tech touch segment, because you know the customer really well, and you can impact the messaging that the customers are getting at various times in their journey. So it not only allows you to tell the story of your product, but there's also the other side to marketing, which is telling the story of your customers to build that customer generation engine. Marketing is a very interesting one when you're at a tech touch company, because there's so much data for you to dig into. So if you have a data analytical bent in your wheelhouse, marketing can be very, very interesting. You know the product probably better than anyone. You're being in support, you know all the issues that come with it, and you know how to tell the story. You know how to tell the story of workarounds so that they don't sound like workarounds, right? They sound like, oh, of course you can accomplish that, and here's the way you do it. And by the way, product, you know, we got some feedback there that we should look at. But the most fun part, I think, is really telling the story of your customers, understanding, again, their business so much that you can show all of the value that they've achieved with your product. And you can just tell that story. You can get other prospects excited about the opportunity to partner with your company.
Give us an example of like a day in the life, what that might look like.
Yeah, it could be something as simple as an onboarding journey. You're getting the new customers coming to your platform. They are just learning about the features and functionalities of your product. So you get to be the teacher at the head of the class and say, look at all these amazing things that this product can do. It can do it in these several ways. And you build out an educational series for a new customer coming on board. So you might use some kind of a marketing tool. You might use a MailChimp, or you might use some kind of customer success tool like a Churn Zero or a Gainsight. You might even use Salesforce. But what you do is you build out the story of your product so that you can show the customer the best way for them to get onboarded to your product, the best way for them to explore and learn how your product does all the things that it does. You can build a program for that, right? You essentially build out on day one at X amount of time after sign up, I want this message to go out. If they, depending upon the tool, you can say, and if they don't respond on day two, I want this message to go out. Or if they do respond, or if they do click the thing that I've asked them to click, they'll get a different message. So you can get really granular with it. And all the while, you get to use those awesome storytelling skills, because you need to craft an email and a subject line that someone's going to want to open, right? These days, man, I don't open a lot of emails. I'll tell you what, I have so many emails just sitting in my inbox. And I used to be the inbox zero kind of girl. These days, nope. Not so much, because every email is exactly the same. So it allows you to be really creative. You know, you get to craft things, you get to A/B test, which means you test two different versions of things and see which one performs better. And then you use that one in future iterations. It can be a lot of fun if that's something that excites you.
Whenever I don't log into a particular subscription or service and I'm getting a reminder email that says, hey, Nicole, we haven't seen you in a while. That's a great example of somebody on the other side of that who created a customer journey, a user journey, and a campaign to get me back and giving them more money. Thank you for sharing that, Brianne.
For people who aren't familiar with what a product person is, I think the quintessential product person is Steve Jobs. It's somebody who is a visionary who wants to bring something to life. Most product teams are not as lofty as that. Some people may perceive themselves that way or aspire to those heights and, you know, bless them for it. But when it comes down to it, it's really about solving a problem within the software that you make available, sometimes the hardware also. And when you're thinking about product, something that is a valuable exercise on that side is building out personas, understanding who's using your software and what do they actually want to accomplish with it. Oftentimes in an organization, your support team knows the actual user persona best. Your sales team may deal with the person that actually signs off to use that software, swipes the credit card, but that's not always the person that's using the software. So if you can come over to the product team, you can help give them really strong insight into who's actually out there using your product and what are their pain points. I think in the past, we talked about some of the high value projects you can do on the support side. And one that I found continuously valuable is actually running reports on the kind of tickets you get. If you've tagged your tickets well, you'll be able to surface both to product and engineering what customers are actually writing in about. A lot of times you'll get a product team that wants to focus on something that sounds fun. AI is really cool. Machine learning is really cool. Big data is really cool. This framework or this visualization is really cool. We should do this because it's cool. Product people are the people who want to make the more cool stuff. You know, again, it's really great because they help keep the organization forward-looking. But if some of your customers' issues are the buttons you have to press in this UI don't make any sense, or I'm not getting the output from this command that I expected I would get, then focusing on new shiny isn't going to cover up all the ways that your product is not usable. I have personally worked with lots of people that have moved over from support to product, and that empathy and compassion, as we talked about in the last episode, for the customers really helps to shape a plan and a roadmap for how to develop the software, the products that your company is bringing to market. If you know the customers have an appetite for something that's a huge leap forward, also sharing that. It's not always just about fix all these bugs first, and then we'll do something fun. You're like, kind of like eat your vegetables and then you'll get something sweet to the product folks. It's also, no, you know what? Something that would be really cool is this. In addition, as I mentioned, product works closely with engineering, and those are the people that fix a lot of things. Those are the people that do the actual implementation of changes to the product. So if you want to move over there and you feel like you've got strong technical chops, you may be able to find a way onto that team as a junior engineer and get the mentorship you need to continue to grow on that side. I managed a team at my last company where it was basically a scheme where people who were career changers who'd gone to boot camp did support for a while and then transitioned over to engineering. I wasn't crazy about this scheme, but the one benefit we got was that when they moved over, we had a whole bunch of buddies on engineering and they knew the issues and they knew where the problem was in the code and they had been itching to fix these issues in the code. So they never really want to be support people, but with the knowledge that they brought from that time they spent on the support desk, they were really able to jam on issues that had been plaguing customers and plaguing them for a really long time. Sometimes companies just aren't ready to take on that junior engineer, or they just see you in one way. Oh, it's Kelly, the support person, you know, and they don't see you beyond that. So if you can use that time there to work on your own small projects, you might be able to slide over to another company that will be excited about taking a chance on you, excited about the experience you've had as a support person, and bring you in to start the next chapter of your career.
So a few other areas that we talked about as being a opportunity for growth in your current role, but could also be full-time positions, depending on the company. One of those examples would be technical writing and documentation. So this is a great opportunity where you can begin getting experience writing. And even if you're just starting out by documenting processes and internal documentation, you can gain that experience and move into a role doing that full time if it's something you really enjoy. companies have the need for internal documentation for their team, external documentation, which would be customer facing, could be documenting really technical specs for a new product and a manual. There are a lot of ways to go in that direction, and something to keep in mind if you enjoy that writing aspect. QA or quality assurance is another area that you can gain experience in, right? QA work that support will typically end up doing just as a natural part of their job, but again, can be a full-time role in itself. And in QA, what you're essentially doing is you're troubleshooting the product, you're poking at it, and you're trying to ensure that it's doing and behaving in all the ways that you would expect it to, and that it's not behaving in unexpected ways. It's a complete path. So those are all the tips that we have for you today on growing your career, leveling it up, no matter the stage of your journey. And throughout the 6 episodes in this series, we've discussed a number of ways to sharpen your skills and advance. It's important to remember that we're all constantly learning, no matter the stage of our career. We'd love for you to stay inspired, follow the topics that interest you, and remain curious. Continue to ask yourself questions and ask questions of others, and think of new ways to stay engaged and provide value for your team. Use your unique strengths. Look out for a bonus Q&A episode and head over to supportnightschool.com. Leave us a comment on this episode or drop us a note on the contact page if you want to ask us any of your burning questions. We'd also love to learn what you found valuable in this series. We intended it to be limited to 6 episodes, but let us know if there's anything else you'd like to hear from us. What else can we help you answer? We've had a lot of fun working together to create this content for you, obviously, and would love your feedback. Thanks for listening.
Class is dismissed.
Don't know what our title is. That's okay. Brady. You know,
fuck!
If that ends up in like a blooper, I'm fine with it. I couldn't not say it. It was too cute. Okay. Yeah.